The Team Never Quit podcast is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. When you use the Navy Federal Cash Rewards card, you can earn up to 1.75% cash back on all purchases. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
I don't care about red or blue anymore. We're here. We're $31 trillion in debt. The problem is in front of us. I don't care which administration did it. There's a point in time we'll be paying more on the interest of the debt in the next 5 to 10 years than we pay on our defense budget.
Never quit. Team never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Team Never Quit podcast. Thank you all for listening, watching, viewing, and subscribing. If you haven't yet, please show your support by hitting that like button or check us out on social media at Team Never Quit. All right, I am thrilled to introduce today's guest to you, a true American patriot, one that you all already know, a distinguished veteran, a successful businessman, and if you didn't think that was enough, a newly appointed politician. Welcome to the show, our former co-host and now United States Congressman, Morgan Luttrell.
Sounds strange to hear that come out of your mouth, nephew.
I heard something the other day, too.
Formal.
The difference between, there is a difference between a politician and a leader.
Politician and a statesman.
Yeah.
There is substantial.
Absolutely.
Substantial difference.
I can't remember what we were watching when I learned that, but it made a complete sense. That's why I'm bringing it up.
What is the difference?
What is it?
You don't want a politician in there.
No.
You want a leader.
Politicians are...
make everybody happy.
Yeah, they play to the position where statesmen represent and lead their constituents.
They polish shit up to where it looks okay.
Yeah,
it's somewhere not, in that word has to have come from that, right?
For sure.
When people call me a politician, I cringe. And it's just a couple months.
Same way with the hero title.
Yeah, man, that's more of a leader.
Because a couple of months ago, I wasn't. I was in Willis the other day doing my first town hall, and it got aggressive. And some of the things that they, and again, the base is amazing. You know, they're very passionate Christian conservatives. So mm-hmm. It was at one point, I was like, hey, you do realize I'm from here. I was like,
what were they being aggressive about?
Pump the brake. It's politics.
Everything.
Politics is aggressive. It doesn't even matter what you're talking about. I mean, there are the hot button topics that everybody will really get aggressive on. But then there's varying levels. And this one, we were talking about January 6th. Mm. This particular question came out, and we around here are very passionate about that.
Yeah,
they wanted answers. And I didn't have the answers that they wanted. I haven't had that opportunity.
How could
yet.
You, man? If our people are
there.
Dude, if our people are climbing the damn walls, that's what that was. Our people are so upset and freaked out about they were climbing the damn walls. Mm-hmm. You don't have an answer for that. We were busy fighting those two wars. We got back trying to figure that out now.
I ask people if you've ever been in a mob setting, if you have ever been inside the bubble.
What'd they say?
Most people haven't, right? You and I have.
Right.
And there's an energy that lives, and once it grows, and if you become a part of it, you may be find yourself in a situation that you're like, hey, I didn't intend to be here. This is where I'm at.
Yeah.
And there's varying degrees of complexity when it came to January 6th. And I've seen a lot of the videos that you see from the D.C. police once I was elected, and I'd say 95-99% of the people there got caught up in that movement, and then you had the nefarious actors that were peppered through the crowds, and I give the DC police so much credit. You know, some of the videos that I saw, and this makes people upset all the time when I say this, but you know, the DC police did an amazing job of restraint, because there were certain situations that they were really getting just close to death. Mm-hmm. And never in history has that was an unarmed mob, and the police there was only one shot fired. you know, and that was where the Alamo was, you know, with Ashley Babbitt. And as sad as that was, they didn't have another choice, in my opinion. And the restraint for the D.C. police, I give them so much credit, because the situation that you and I have been overseas, if they've escalated that much, there would have been rounds going downrange, you know, because they were in fear for
their lives.
The
Alamo fell today, by the way.
Today's the anniversary?
Today's the anniversary of the Alamo.
Oh. That's interesting. Yeah, it's so crazy.
But it still resonates. I mean, that was a few years ago, but people are so patched because they still have the January 6th rioters that are in incarceration in Washington, right. D.C., and I'm doing my best to get the information to them. And the criminal justice system there is, you could say, broken, and they don't allow access to the prison. So even as a congressional member, I can't get in there. I can request information, but
there's still people in jail.
Oh yeah,
I didn't realize that.
Oh, there's people in jail that haven't had an arraignment date yet. I mean, it's the breakdown of due process.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's clear in the Constitution you can't do that to them.
It is. And the questions that I've asked, and there's some members that have been up there longer than I have that had the opportunity to speak to some of their leadership inside the prison system, and apparently it's the Washington. And I don't know this because, but this is what I've been told, is it's the bottleneck of the system itself. They're so overwhelmed with just the caseload, and the January 6th folks are just in the pipeline, and they're steadily trying to. But DC's a, you know, you can argue a dumpster fire. I mean, they voted.
Yeah.
They wanted everybody that lived in D.C. to have the right to vote. Even if you were a Chinese citizen working for the Chinese mm-hmm. government, if you were a Russian citizen working at the Russian embassy, you had the right to vote.
Man, I wasn't up there on that day, but I know what it looks like when someone's holding a grudge.
Is it
and a lot of that looks like that.
Are they in a federal prison? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, federal prison, yep.
Because it was on federal grounds.
Mm-hmm. Federal crime.
Someone trying to get somebody back for doing something. That's what that is.
That's so crazy. Golly, I don't, oof. Okay, so one of the questions I've been dying to ask you, because I know a lot of people, there's just misinformation about, mm-hmm. is what can a congressman do and what can't they do? What is your role as a congressman? Yeah,
that's really a great question. And you have to understand, as a congressional member in the lower chamber,
what does that mean?
So the House is broken into two chambers, the lower chamber and the upper chamber. Senate is the upper chamber. Mm-hmm. All right, they're judiciary, more or less. There's 50 of them. I'm sorry, there's 100 of them. Two per state.
Two per state,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then there's 435 of us. And then there's
always?
Always. And then there's 8 non-voting members, like from Guam and Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic.
What does that mean?
They have representatives in the House of Representatives.
But they don't have a congressman.
They don't have. No, they do. They have a member, but they're not voting members because they're not states. Okay, so
they just have opinions.
So who do they answer to?
They answer to their base, but they're territories. They're not states. So 435 state representatives in the lower chamber, which is.
So do they have their own government? If they can't vote or anything, what is that?
Well, they're
yeah. So
they're
no, they represent their territories,
states.
Like we represent our states. But when it comes to passing laws and legislation, they can't. They're not voting members. So the territories have they're governed on their own. But
that's what I was
asking. We provide them funding and we claim them as a territory. They have representation in the House.
We protect them if someone tries to attack. All that is.
Yeah. So as a congressman, my job is to pass legislation. That's it. Period. I can't. And this is where. There's a misconception, and depending on what's happening at the time, some members have gotten themselves in trouble saying, "Hey, look, I'm going after, and they're going to jail." Mm-hmm. I can't say that. It's not my fiduciary responsibility to charge somebody with a criminal act. Mm-hmm. My job is to hear testimony mm-hmm. of anything that may be broken or fixed, and create legislation and pass bills that fix problems. That's my job. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that may be, whatever piece of law needs to be passed, the lower chamber makes that happen. Another role and responsibility of the lower chamber of Congress is we control the purse strings. We control the money,
mm-hmm.
right? We provide funding for all of our appropriations bills, their allotment for that and for that year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And right now, this past year, the omnibus bill, everyone is familiar with, the omnibus bill is just a bunch of stuff together, just thrown together. Okay, it's just legislation from a civil rights thing or Green New Deal to gun rights. Mm-hmm. It's just a hodgepodge of we in the Republican Party, we don't like omnibus bills, right? Because there's just no germaneness to it. You know, I could be pushing something across for defense, and then somebody's going to throw in a transgender issue.
Yeah.
Right? It's just off the charts. Well, in the last omnibus bill that passed for $1.7 trillion, that paid for everything in 2023. Okay, so right now the Republican Party, since they're in control of the lower chamber, not the Senate, but the lower house, mm-hmm. that means that we are just kind of have our hands tied until October 1st, the beginning of the new fiscal year, where we can say, all right, hey, look, you know what? You want money for your social programs? Secure the border. Mm-hmm. Or we're just going to take it right away from you. And since since Biden signed in the bill last year, everything's funded. Like the 87,000 IRS agents that we repealed on this year, our first mm-hmm. vote was to repeal 87,000 IRS agents, okay? That'll go to the Senate. The Senate has to sign off on it, and then it'll go to the president for signature. The Senate will kill it. We don't own the Senate. The Democrats do, right? Okay. So even if we pass legislation out of the House and it goes to the Senate most likely will kill it. Now, if you pass it to the Senate, let's say the Senate pushes it, the president can say, I don't like it, and he can veto that. Mm-hmm. But come October 1st, we can stop funding to those 87,000 IRS agents, and then that's what's going to stop, because right now they're still ramping up on everything. Mm-hmm. So passing legislations and controlling government money is what congressmen and women do. Mm-hmm. That is our primary role. Now our reach, if you will, is why I walked into the Conroe VA and they're still mandating masks. Mm-hmm. Talked to the secretary of the VA, Mr. McDonough, the next day, great guy. Great man. I'm going to tell you right now, I respect. He was Obama's chief of staff, longest serving chief of staff. Very fascinating guy. Had a great political career. I reached out to him. He actually came to my office and sat with me and chatted. And I said, hey, sir, it's still mandating masks in my VA. My veterans don't want this being treated differently. He's like, give me 2 weeks. And then Friday, this past Friday, they came out with new legislation that says, I'm sorry, new requirements saying that the onus is on the facility. So if it's not a hotspot, no masks. Mm. If there's an outbreak and something, hey, we're gonna require you that you mask up.
So that's whoever's in charge of that specific facility.
Yeah, yes, yes. And they'll still go off of CDC guidance. So mm-hmm. Is it an absolute win? We're like, hey, we're getting rid of masks altogether. You know, it's not a perfect world. There's negotiations there. Mm-hmm. But the secretary did a great job, I think, in getting this, you know, we're moving the pendulum where we want it to go.
So explain the difference between the bills that we passed for $7 trillion that just come in one bill, as opposed to what the national debt is.
Okay, so the omnibus bill, it wasn't $7 trillion, but we've over this is $1.7 trillion. Yeah. But this current administration is taken up to a high, you know, below $10 trillion, right? The previous administration did a pretty substantial amount onto the national debt. So every time we pass a bill, and here's the problem that we're seeing. This is the problem that exists. Okay, make no mistake about it. We're here. We're not at the cliff's edge. We're over it. We spend more as a country than we take in, either from our economy mm-hmm. locally or imports. Okay, tax revenue and all that combined. The numbers, you know, they kind of fluctuate, but we take in $8 trillion.
Because that doesn't make sense to do that.
No, it's absolutely upside
down.
Who's
doing that?
Who's
been doing that?
If we are okay, so we're here at $31 trillion.
You and I just got in, brother.
Okay, and I really
when like you got to explain
when
to
I,
me.
Yeah, when I talk to folks, I'm like, hey, look, no, I don't care about red or blue anymore. We're here. We're $31 trillion in debt. The problem is in front of us. I don't care which administration did it. Every administration added money.
We ain't got time to figure that out.
I think Clinton was the only one that didn't. Right back in
he balanced it.
He balanced
that
it.
Sucker.
He balanced
I remember that.
Now, with the debt and the debt ceiling, because that's coming up, we've met our debt ceiling.
What does that mean?
So imagine you have a credit card. You have a $5,000 spending limit on that credit card. If you go over it, you either have to call the credit card company and say, hey, I went over. I need you to extend my credit to $10,000, or you pay it.
Right.
Okay. We, for the past decades, have been increasing our debt limit from $10 billion to $20 billion to trillions to trillion, 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 all the way up to $31 trillion. And we're here, and we hit it last month. Mm. Now, what we as members of Congress have to vote on whether or not we're going to raise the debt ceiling. Okay. Now you can have a slick debt ceiling where, hey, look, we don't want anything in return. We're just going to sign this. We're going to vote it in and we're going to increase the debt ceiling from, and I don't have the exact number, but it could be $35 trillion. It could be $40 trillion. Okay. Cause we have to pay our debt.
To whom?
To the American public.
To ourselves.
To,
yeah.
Well, the large percentage of it is to us in bonds, in treasury bonds, which is the most secure bond there is, because that's saying the American people, the American treasury bond is safe, it's secure. Mm-hmm. And if we don't pay it, the American public, we don't pay the American public. But we own money around the world as well, okay? Mm-hmm. It's broken down into percentages. The vast majority of the money owed out with the national debt belongs to the American public.
So we're extending debt on ourselves.
That's when like the stock market crashes and all of that kind of stuff. If it gets too high.
So how is it even real money?
If we,
like, if we're borrowing it against ourselves and we're the ones that have to pay it back, then
well, there are folks out there that argue like, hey, we're never going to be in national debt because we can print our own money. You just can't do that. I mean,
there has to be a standard.
It's not, right? It's not good business. Yeah, that makes no sense to me. It makes sense to some people. But if we don't pay the national debt, if we don't increase the debt limit, like for me, when it comes time to vote for this debt ceiling, I want something in return. Hey, you're going to have to decrease spending somewhere. And this is where you hear, hey, what is it that we're going to take money from? What is it that we're not going to spend money on? And depending on what side of the aisle you're on, people are freaking out. Like, oh, the Republicans are going to take Social Security. They're going to take Medicare, Medicaid. They're
that's
going to
already
take
gone.
Stuff. They're going to
that's
take
stuff. That's already spent, right?
No, that is. That's called mandatory spending. That no matter what, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, veterans, and financial services all get paid, and defense all get paid, period. They just do. Then you have what's called non-discretionary spending or non-mandatory spending, and that's social programs. That's things that we as the government send money out to the states to say, all right, here's money.
So our mandatory programs that get the money, do they set the price standard across the board?
It's usually predicated off the previous year's number.
In what regard?
If DOD comes or Veterans Affairs comes in and says, hey, we need $2 trillion to protect, to cover everything for our veterans in 2022. In 2023, that's going to be the baseline. And then they'll say, well, we need $3 trillion this year.
So do we have a baseline standard each year that the government sets that everyone can pick from before that starts happening?
You know, ideally what it would be is every
year. This is how much we got.
Every year, in my opinion, what needs to happen is every single department, every single appropriations needs to come to the government with a slick budget and say, and you have to lobby for your new, you don't get $22 trillion again.
Yeah, that doesn't even make sense.
Would make more sense to be able to.
I thought you needed the $22 trillion to solve this problem. Like, you shouldn't have to cut. I shouldn't even see your ass next year.
Yeah. It would make more sense to actually have an accounting of what the money is going to.
What do you mean come back?
Well,
unless it's defense or
so,
whatever.
So those books are closed. That's what they're called, closed. So mandatory spending is closed. Nobody looks at them. It's just whatever comes.
What year?
I don't have that. I don't have that answer. It's been there for a while.
Is this before we was here?
Oh yeah. And what?
Because we moved back for big brother.
What talks? There's talks. Okay. And just hear me out here. I'm not saying this is definitive, but there are talks of saying, hey, look, let's open up the books on the mandatory side, and if there's something there that doesn't need to be there, let's cut it.
Exactly.
Okay. But you say that, and people on the left will be like, oh, they're cutting Social Security. That's why you need to vote Democrat. Oh, they're taking I was on a committee hearing last Friday, and one of the members said, hey, I want a show of hands of all you veterans in the audience right now. There's like 250 of them. I want a show of hands in the audience right now. Who would be okay with the government taking money away from your health care? Show of hands. Of course, nobody raised their hands. And then the gentleman was like, okay, well, the Republican Party is going to take our spending back to 2019. So they're taking tens of millions of dollars away from you. I just want you to know that, which is not what we're doing. You know, I was almost tempted to say, hey, look, you know what? There's not a veteran in this room. What would take a hit if necessary? I'm not saying it would happen, but if necessary, in order to see their country come back to center. You know, but I wasn't there. I was there in order to help the veterans at that particular time. So that's where this is where the politics comes into it, right?
Well, and if we,
so
a lot
if,
of-
let me close it out, but if we don't, like I want discretionary spending. I want to see some spending taken away, right? And then if I need to vote for the debt ceiling, I'm like, okay, look, I'm okay with increasing the debt ceiling this much because we took away this many trillions or hundreds of billions of dollars. It needs to be said that if we don't increase the debt ceiling, if we don't do that and we default, that's a problem. That's a huge problem.
To whom?
To the American public, to the global economy.
Yeah.
See, we still are the beacon on the hill, right? Our currency is still the global currency. We default, global currency could switch to something else.
Yeah, our
and then we
drops.
Don't, and if we default and we don't pay veterans, we don't pay Medicare, Medicaid, we pay Social Security. You know, it could get to that. Now, there are funding lines out there that cover down, but you. So here's the game.
Who's in charge of waste, fraud, and abuse?
There's departments inside the government. So here's the games, right? The Democrats, they did all the spending in the past 4 years, right? They've owned the House for the last 4 years, but Biden's been in office 2 years. So this spending line is on them. But now we have the House. So it's our responsibility to pay the bills.
Oh, they put you in charge of taking the money away from the kids. That's who the bad parent is, right? Kind of like that. That's what it feels like. Well, living in kinda, here is a freaking divorce.
So there's the back and forth, right? That's how this happens.
One parent throws a shitload of money at somebody to shut us up, and then the other one tries to make us follow the rules, and then those two cause chaos.
Anyway, so it's not a. I don't look at it again. Like I said, I don't look at it as a red and blue problem. It's a problem. We have it. We're here. There's a point in time we'll be paying more on our debt than we will. On the interest of the debt. I'm sorry. We will be paying more on the interest of the debt in the next 5 to 10 years than we pay on our defense budget.
Wow.
You don't know how to fix that?
What do you need up there?
Is the problem?
So the most brilliant people in the world have been in Washington, D.C. for the last 240 plus years, right? And we're still in this. We still have this problem. Now, COVID didn't help. The wars don't help. You know, there's problems that just pop up that, like, we didn't see this coming. Ukraine. Right, we spent billions of dollars over to Ukraine. That's a big source of contention. You know, I'm a guy that says, hey, we need to have guardrails in place. We need to have some oversight to see where all this money is going. I'm not about reconstruction once this thing ends. When does it end? I mean, here's all these questions that just
isn't NATO supposed to do that?
No, NATO's I wouldn't.
Nah,
America. Yeah, they're supposed to, but America.
I mean, what the hell they do?
America's big brother. Everybody's supposed to take 2% of their GDP. Right, America's just in the past has paid.
That's why. Well, that's why America will always be around, because our boys will always go scrap for somebody else.
Yeah.
Okay. So another question that I had was, since you've actually been there, what are some of the things that you were surprised by? That you were like, oh, I thought we could do that and we can't, or just something that threw you for a loop?
Let's see. I seeing it firsthand. And I don't mean this in a good way or a bad way. It's just a way. But seeing it firsthand, the theatrics of Congress, when the camera's on or we're on the floor, and you see it. You see the podium, you know, and then they're in the committees and they're just going back and forth with each other. And when I say theatrics, people will turn this switch on and they'll become these actors, you know, for their base and for the American public. And then when they walk off the floor, we're having a conversation like this. But it's to a point now that, like, there's some members on the Democratic side that are great people. Mm-hmm. I enjoy hanging out with them. I enjoy chatting with them. Mm-hmm. But when they turn on, I leave.
Yeah.
And then when they turn the switch off, we have a conversation like we're having right now.
How great is that, though? That's what you're dealing with.
I don't look at them, like, there were some members that, I was like, man, I don't hate you, but I disagree with you so much. I just don't want to be around you. But they do that for their base. That's why they keep getting elected, because their base loves it. And they are absolutely, it's a competition.
Which means we have that type of person here, which means you have to respect
that. So it's my job.
But do you think that that's healthy, that they're actually acting to their base?
It doesn't matter. It's what they do to get the point across.
So let me be clear. When I say when it's an act, it's this stage mm-hmm. performance, if you will. But a lot of the members, again, do amazing things for their constituents mm-hmm. that don't have the same belief systems that we do here.
You're right. I totally get that.
Yeah. So I don't look at now, and I've only been there for 2 months, but I don't look at them as like they're my competition. You know,
right.
If they're doing something amazing that's winning over, you know, a large majority of people to their side, I'm like, oh, I need to do that. You know, here I'm sitting here.
It's like a brother or sister running their house. They have to run it their way. I mean, we're not here to decide that. I don't think you're really supposed to get along or love some other state's congressman if they're not from your area. You can't disagree with them. You're not from that area. But it's got to be great to see that in action.
Mm-hmm.
Some other things.
Different rooms in this house.
The power of the purse and the power of the pen was impressive to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you literally I can strike a law. If I can get it through, it can change the course of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been doing that since I got up there. We're in the hundreds of bills that we pushed through. None have made it to the president's desk, you know. But, that was an eye-opening experience. And your reach as a member, because you're elected by the people.
Right.
What's that feel like?
Very, very humbling. Very,
it was, right?
Very, very humbling. Especially since we grew up here.
You can't mess this up, big bro.
Yeah, I know. Trying my best.
I think about that every morning, just so you know.
Because
how much blood, sweat, and
when
flesh
I was an appointee
on the
under Secretary Perry, you know, I was appointed by the government, but I'm elected by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's almost 800,000 people that I speak for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very powerful.
I've never really understood this. Are your constituents the ones bringing you policy change?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have people that actually, because I've never in my life thought, oh, I'm going to change this bill because I don't like it.
Well, like Brian Talley.
Yeah.
Remember we had him on the show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big veteran advocate.
How about that dude?
He got his own legislation. And he literally flew to D.C. and wrangled up some members like, I need help.
Right.
And he got the Talley bill passed, you know, and I've been chatting with him since I was a candidate. And even after the fact, he's bringing me, he talks to so many veterans in our district and across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down with him a couple of weeks ago and he brought me a list of things like, this is what the veterans want. And I'm like, I got it. So I go to DC and I'm like, this is legislation we need to change right mm-hmm. here.
That's what I was going to ask you, man, because the veterans, we're coming after them. You're in there. We're in there now.
Well,
right?
I'm on the Veterans Affairs Committee.
Right. Yeah, real quick. Will you name the committees that you've been appointed to?
Sure. I'm on three committees and six subcommittees. So I'm on the House Armed Services Committee, which is DOD Defense.
Mm-hmm.
The two subcommittees for HASC, House Armed Services Committee, is Special Operations and Intelligence, which fits my background very well, and cyber. Which I'm a total cyber geek. So it's a super B committee
mm-hmm.
and then two great subcommittees. My second committee is Homeland Security. I'm on border security for that one. I'm actually the vice chairman for border security. And then I'm on cyber as well for House, which is great because I can talk back and forth with DOD mm-hmm. and we're kind of breaking those silos down. And then I'm on Committee for Veterans Affairs. And the two subcommittees there are Disability Assistance and Memorial Affairs, where I'm the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And health. So I literally have the opportunity to touch everything. Like when Brian brought that, I was like, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on it.
So SHIELD. Did y'all get that? It's basically SHIELD.
That's awesome.
That's a lot to keep up with.
Yeah.
So you have
strategic homeland intervention.
People beat lobbyists up a lot, and I get it because they just, you know.
Explain what that is.
Abraham Lincoln coined the word lobbyist because there was the people that would hang out in the lobby of his hotel, and when he would come down, they would just bum rush him and say, we need this, and this is what we'll do for you.
Mm.
You know, back in those days, it was a lot different. So lobbyist comes from Abraham Lincoln. Now, what lobbyists do, depending on, let's just say you have an oil and gas company, they'll have a lobbyist that will come and meet with members and say, hey, look, my company needs this, this, and this. All right. And they engage with you. Like mm-hmm. they're the voice.
Yeah.
Right. This is the kind of legislation that we need that's concerning. This is what we need to get. This is how we need to do it. We need to do an amendment for this. And that's what lobbyists do.
There's some pretty good hustlers up there.
Oh, yeah.
They're good, right?
Yeah. A lot of them are former members.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 So they know how to speak the language. You know,
oh,
they know
wow.
how to navigate.
There you go. Right. There's something right there, man.
anyway, it just I keep them at arm's length. They're a great source, like the Lockheed Martin, you know, or Chevron, or you know, or you know, an environmentalist group, mm-hmm. you know, will come in and say, hey, look, you know, this is really, it's like, okay, let's take a hard look at this. Let's see what we can do. I mean, every big organization has a team of lobbyists that work locally and in D.C.
So say if something needs to get fixed, so in your district, what stops you when someone walks in and says, hey, we need the roads fixed or the infrastructure, this road fixed right now? Why does it take so long from the time it gets to you or to get passed down to get done? What gets in the way?
Well, there's multiple levels from state to federal.
Right. And I think that's a big misconception that I wanted you to point out is a lot of people that elected you that are local, they think that you can fix a road here. Well, doesn't that fall on
it's a county.
The county.
If it's numbered, it's county. If it's a name, I may be getting this backwards. If it's a number, it's a state. If it's a name, it's a county.
What does that mean?
Like
if I-45 is a state, that's actually federal, but if it's 290 mm-hmm. or 2920, TxDOT works on that road.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
If it's Buddy Riley, mm-hmm. that's county.
Yeah.
County. Who's in charge of picking up the trash around
here? Marcus everywhere? Wants to talk to them.
Okay.
Whoever that is, you're going to be getting a visit from me.
That would be Buddy Riley, wouldn't it?
One day.
Charlie.
I'm sorry, not Buddy Riley.
I mean, call your elected officials.
Charlie Riley.
I'm looking at it. How's that feel?
But here, let me dig into this for you. So federal funding. And the government will push out a certain amount of money that goes out to the states to help for federal like roads and bridges and infrastructure and whatnot. And how that works from the federal government, and I'm very new at this, so if I don't get exactly right, everybody out there listening, don't beat me up too bad. I'm still learning a lot. So at the federal level,
they're gonna beat the dog shit out of us, man. Are you even kidding me?
They'll push money down to the state, mm-hmm. and then when the state gets the federal funding, it has all of the counties. In Texas, will come to our state government and say, we need this much money, mm-hmm. right? And then the state government will allocate funds down and into the state. And then how it's disseminated there, that's politics 101. Like Harris County, they get a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Polk County hardly gets any. So where my role comes in is I need to not, if I say, hey, if I'm fighting for federal funds to get to the state, I'm going to tell my state representatives, I'm like, hey, look, you need to take a hard look at Polk County or San Jacinto. You know, I get Harris County's got all the people and they're having these problems, but don't forget about us country folk out here.
Right, and Harris County's roads are shit.
Yeah, that's my question. How do the little people get maneuvered to get in there if you got the big lobbyists in the way of everything?
That should be through the elected officials. I mean, every single...
That's the trick? That's the key shot, right?
Everyone, and I tell everybody, it's like, hey, come talk to me. You got to tell me. You know, work your state officials because they're there. I mean, it goes from actually your county chair, your party's leadership to your county, to your city leadership, to your county leadership. I'm talking everywhere from the mayors to the city council and then to the state representatives and your state senators. You need to talk to these people. I remember we were growing up and I saw Kevin Brady on the street. I was like, oh, that's Congressman Ken.
I know exactly who the sheriff was.
You're not allowed to talk to him. But that is absolutely backwards. The only way we know exactly what the people need is they come up and talk to us. Mm-hmm. Like I gave away my privacy rights. The day that I was elected. I mean, no matter where I'm at or where I'm standing, if you got a problem, you're supposed to come up, man. You're supposed to address that with me so I can address it at my level and get information down and into, again, here, the district in order to help people. Mm-hmm. But it's challenging. Just the scope of what we're doing here. And everybody's personality is different. Everybody has just a tweak on what...
That's the trick right there.
Trying to make everybody happy or getting everything for everybody is very challenging.
Right.
That's why you got to know your community and who you put in there.
You do.
There is a straight shot. What we're figuring out is like if you have something, my favorite is when people complain about a road needing to be fixed and then while it's being fixed, they complain.
That it's being fixed.
That it's being fixed.
And there's traffic.
Okay, so we're always going to have them. Okay, that's a normal deal. But if, like, you have something straight up, there is a line of people that you can go talk to that will get it done, or should get it done, as opposed to having to go out, spend a bunch of money to get. That's not how it works. You already do that in your taxes.
Well, one of the biggest challenges I feel like you would face is that you only have 2 years to do this.
I'm already campaigning again.
And you have, so you have my to election start campaigning.
My election is on the 5th of next year, and I've only been a congressman for 3 months.
I feel like that's unfair that you...
No, it's brilliant.
Yeah, to keep it that short, right?
Absolutely. The founding fathers did a great... Because if I'm up there messing up, if I'm up there not doing the will of the base, they can get me.
Because y'all got the money.
That's true.
It's like if someone's spending too much money too fast, gets rid of them suckers, man, right?
Yep. That's part of it.
If you get, if you're senators, or that's kind
of... There's talks of kind of tweaking it, term limits. But I'm a term limits guy. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm all in term. I'm not going to be there.
I agree, yeah.
I say, give me my freshman year. Just let me figure out how to be a congressman and give me 3 terms. I'm going.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I have my word. 2 years, it seems short, and it feels short. You know, because not only I'm out campaigning again, but I'm also representing District 8.
Man, how,
but that's it's great. You know, and it's supposed to be hard. That's why you and
technically, how long would you
I don't complain. I don't complain. Everybody's, how's it going? Is it miserable? It's like, I would never complain about this job because I fought so hard to get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like going through bus to be a team guy. You know, why would you bitch about it? It's a volunteer program.
Yeah, it's a volunteer.
It has its challenges, but you know, that's the ones that are, if you want it, if you want to represent your folks bad enough and you prove to them that you're capable, they'll elect you. And that's
battle rhythm wise, how long does it take you to, because if it's every 2 years, you got to get elected. How long does it take you to get to know the system? Like even to figure out the routine, that's got to be over a year, right?
Yeah,
half a year.
I can't speak for other members. Cause everyone's different. For me, it's still a very vertical learning curve. There's just so much.
It's got to change every time something new comes.
I'm just getting
into
my committee hearings and time. So I get up every morning. I get up every morning at 4:40. I'm at baseball practice at 5:30. I'm back at the house at 7. My first meeting's at 8. I get home around 10:30 at night. I study till about 2. And then I go to bed. Because I have to study for my committee hearings the next day. And the reason I'm able to do that is because we're up there from Monday to Thursday or Tuesday to Friday, so I can go on two hours of sleep for a couple of days and then come home and rest.
Yeah.
So just for the listeners, for them to understand your schedule and what this is, you're flying to D.C. from the Houston area, greater Houston area, to D.C. on Tuesday mornings about?
So this week it's Tuesday morning. Uh-huh. So I'll leave out early in the morning and I'll get to D.C. right in early afternoon. And then we're briefed up on the week. So my staff is there waiting for me. They let me know what legislation is going to be for that day and that week. They've already sent me all this so I can read what I'm versed on it. And then we'll have votes that evening because they call it a fly-in day. So we'll vote around 7 o'clock, I think, that evening, that series of votes, and then we'll adjourn. And then the day starts. I usually have an event after floor votes, like a dinner or something. I'll have somebody from the district in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
Chamber of Commerce, Lions, well, whomever, right? And they like to meet with their congressman in Washington, D.C. So I'll go out and have dinner with some folks, and then that'll drag all the way out, well, again, to about 10:30, 10:30. Then I go home and read over the next day's hearings and then crash out. And I say, get up and then start the whole routine over again and then fly home on, like this week, I'll fly home Friday night around 7. Then...
But then you have to do stuff in your district.
So if we're on recess, like we were, if I'm home that entire week, it's the same operational tempo as in D.C. Okay. So the district staff and everybody, and I'm going, you know, it takes 4 hours to drive across the district.
Right.
So I'm meeting with as many people as I can. You know, in D.C., I'm meeting with someone different from everybody every 15 minutes. And then depending on the committee meeting, it could be 2.5 hours long, it could be 3 hours long, it could be 30 minutes. You know, yeah. Homeland and Hasker. Those are some big committees. Those are important committees. I travel. I was in El Paso last weekend at the border meeting with the committee went out there. So we were meeting with the Border Patrol, with the National
Guard.
How
are they doing?
They're struggling. I mean, the border's dumpster fire. So
hold the line, boys.
Yeah, God bless them, man. They're really giving everything they have. But that's okay. I enjoy. It's very, you know, it can be very structured. It can get loose. There's some members up there. They got one meeting a day. You know.
Yeah. there's a lot of people that I've just heard feedback. They're like, oh, what a cush job to be a congressman. I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah, no, same, man. Where are they from?
I promised everybody I was going up there to work.
Yeah.
There's a handful of us that have three committees and six subcommittees, and they're aggressive. And being a chair one's even, you know, because you're that's yours.
Yeah.
And if you want to be effective, you have to be there the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. I've got to see things. Back I get classified briefings again. You're back, especially being on a special ops subcommittee. You know, special forces spec op committee comes briefs us. You know, we'll have classified briefings and like, all right, man, it's good to hear.
I bet that's fun. It is.
I'm the only SF guy on there too, so it's awesome. Cool. Yeah, I'm really enjoying that.
Is there anything in DC that you just have fallen in love with, history wise, or anything?
It's very humbling to walk through the halls. Through the Capitol itself, there's just so much history on the walls, so many statues, there's so many stories that go along with, hey, such and such member, this is where such and such member was shot, this is such and such members, this is where this discussion happened. And you go into the you stand right there where Abraham Lincoln had his desk. You know, every member of Congress was right there. When we walk onto the House floor, I mean, there was the guy that broke in, came in with a gun and fired two rounds off, you know, and then the bullet holes are still there, they left the bullet holes there.
And a desk, right?
And a desk, and in the ceiling.
Yeah.
And just taking all that in, you never go to work. It's like you never go to work and do the same thing twice.
Sure. And you just remember while you were up there waiting for you to get sworn in, I started, you know, wandering around a little bit around the hall, trying to poke my nose into some of them places that I probably shouldn't belong. And the staff's great. Like people who actually work the city, work the veins of the city. That's what I'm glad you're up there now, because that's what I'm gonna get to know.
I walk 8 to 10 miles a day underground.
Is King Darius with you?
Is there
Darius? Remember I ran into him? I told you you can pull this part out. The Secret Service dude, when I went poking into the speaker's office. I thought you said you knew him.
Maybe tell him.
Big tall black guy? Darius?
He's for the speaker.
Yeah.
Cafeteria, where do y'all eat?
There are a couple of cafeterias. You can get to the Senate side and the congressional side all underground. Mm. And both sides have amazing cafeterias. There's a Subway. There's stuff to eat, right?
So you can get to your office to the Capitol underground?
Underground. There's a train. Oh, wow. There's actually a train. I don't ever take it, but there's a little tram underground on both sides.
How far does that web kind of spread out underground? Like, how far can you actually travel?
You know, buddy, I do 8 to 10 miles. And that's me going from the three congressional office buildings, Rayburn, Longworth, and Cannon, and then over to the Capitol for votes and back. I don't know. That's a great trivia question, because I found myself in places before. I'm like, what is this?
That's crazy.
You know, they have a carpenter shop underneath the Capitol. They rebuild all the furniture, so they don't outsource it. It's all built in underneath.
Oh, that's
the
cool. Capitol.
Yeah, that stuff I'm talking about, like the hidden stuff that's been around since it's been around.
George Washington's sarcophagus is underneath the Capitol Dome. It's in this very unassuming little staircase. You walk in, and there's a sarcophagus that's covered by this black cloth. No sign, nothing. There's no signs or anything. And he's not there, but his casket is there.
Gosh, it's like St. Peter underneath the Vatican.
But you can spend.
That's cool.
And I try to take a mental note when I'm walking around, just because things I haven't seen before. I'm like, okay, I need to find out what that is. That's our nation's history right there in one building. And it's crazy.
Okay, so speaking of campaigning, why does each congressman have to raise so much money?
That's another great point. Because of the aggressiveness of social media, because of the aggressiveness of media itself, the more that you're seen on TV, radio, flyers and mailers, and social media, the better chance you have of touching every single person in your district, as well as raising that capital. and TV, that's all so expensive.
So you have to raise the money in order to buy the ads. Yes. So yeah. Most, you would say most money from the campaign is put towards...
A large majority of that that you raise for your campaign sign is to pay for your campaign staff, mm-hmm. campaign director, your field directors, the ones that are helping you, mm-hmm. you know, navigate the district, as well as, yes, the medias and the flyers and the mailers and the yard signs.
Yeah.
And everything that goes into it, which is a lot. And it's numbers. It is a numbers game. It's statistically those who spend an exorbitant amount of money just to get that word out. And you see the commercials on TV. There's so much money spent on, like, there were so many commercials that are just bashing people.
Yeah. That, right? As your sister, that was probably the hardest thing for me, is to see all the mailers that were blatant lies.
Yeah, it's
but how can there ever be some sort of law put into place that it has to be a fact check to be printed or put out in media?
Pretty sure there's something in the Constitution that says you can freedom of speech is.
But that's so shitty.
Something in the Bible says don't bear false witness, though.
Yeah, I just want to put it out there. For all of our listeners, when you get a mailer in or things that you say on TV, they could be looking you straight in the eye and telling you a straight up freaking lie. And that was the hardest thing for me during your campaign, is seeing just people lie. Even on social media, and there were a couple of times where I sent back, you know, you don't know your facts, just check your facts. And Marcus is like, don't waste your time on those people.
It doesn't even stir us up. If you pay any attention to it, it doesn't affect me and my brother. We grew up, everybody trying to kill us and talking down to us. We're prepared for that. We've already been trained for that.
I know.
So that smack and all that talk.
I think our district appreciated I never got in the mud with anybody.
Yeah, we don't have to do that.
The worst thing that I ever saw was one of your competitors, or not competitor, but what do you call it? One of the other candidates.
Yeah. That's just,
if somebody's got to tell you what's bad about us as opposed to what's good about them, think about that. Because everybody that we grew up here.
Yeah.
Everybody knows exactly.
And I ran into three of my opponents, two actually the other night. Very cordial. Man, you know, hey, good to see you, man. How you been?
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, if I could, I would smack one right across the face.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all right. Like, hey, that is
fight men.
You know,
don't remember that.
That's another thing when you're up there with the members that just go through this grueling campaign cycle and they just get killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes so much of a toll on them and their families, and then they're there.
Yeah,
right. It is so hard to get up there. Yeah. It is. I mean, you earn it. You earn the right.
Well, they say in order for it to become a great man in front of your people, you have to be humiliated by them.
That happens every day.
No, I'm saying we're going through that phase right now. First, we had to bleed for them. Now we got to go through this.
As an elected official, that people will walk right up to you and tell you exactly what they think about you.
I do appreciate that.
Isn't that great? God bless America.
Campaigning, you didn't participate in that negative, like, never bashing went and lies, and not telling lies about other people. I think that
I don't know any.
I think that really helped you in your campaign too.
I don't know any damn lies about people. I mean, who does that?
They just make shit up. They literally made shit up. And I actually heard from a couple of people that said that they changed, because we were working the polls at the elementary school. And a couple of people came up to me and said, I changed my vote because Morgan didn't participate in the bash talking.
Yeah.
The candidate that I was going for, I saw that person bashing other candidates, and I don't like that. And so I changed my vote to Morgan. And that made me happy.
Stop doing that when we got in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Our mentality, it translated very well into the elected life. I'll go back to our first town hall. I don't deflect questions. If somebody wants to go into a rabbit hole, I'll crawl down in there with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my staff was like, "Man, no, don't do that." You know, but I stood up there, took it on the chin, and answered the questions, and I answered them to in exhaustion because people want to know. And I kept telling them, like, "Hey, look, I'm here to provide you with all the information I have from Washington D.C. You know, and I'm giving it to you straight, unfiltered." I'm not trying to change your opinion about anything. I'm just telling you what I've learned for you so I can share that with you. It's my job.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to do it y'all's way, but in our style. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what you put somebody up there.
Do my best to never ask a question off a question somebody asked me. Because I'm not scared to say, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've got my staff and I'll dig into that. And I'm hoping that that's going to get me reelected for, a couple more terms and then I'm out. We'll see. It's politics. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
Wow. It's definitely a different world now, man. Whatever.
We are so proud of you.
Yeah, I mean, great job, bro.
Up there. Yeah.
And earlier you mentioned you have softball practice in the morning.
Baseball.
Baseball practice.
I know. It's not softball, man. So I tried out for the congressional baseball team. Cool. It's baseball.
Baseball. What? So is it just a bunch of congressmen on?
Yep. Congressmen and senators.
It's a big deal. It's on TV, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge deal.
It's just one game, though.
One game. We practice all year for one game.
Really?
It's June 14th this year.
Who's in charge of the Democrat team? I need them to know I need a jersey so I can be on the other side. So whoever's running that side, this is brother. Find me because I'm on some fun with this. You Republicans are in some trouble when I show up.
Yeah, that would be my worst fear to see you in a Democrat
on third baseline. Heckling my brother. It's the only time I'm going to do that, man.
I know, but golly, that's more painful to me than it is your own brother.
So it is Republicans versus Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Oh, you're going.
I'll be there.
I feel like we all need to be there.
We're going to have the whole family there. Right?
Is it
all our boys
at the National Stadium?
At National Stadium.
That's
a big deal, right?
Playing on Major League Ballpark.
Ooh. How about that?
And so our practice.
What position?
I'm catcher.
With them badass knees of yours. There you go. Good thinking, Republicans.
I tell you what. So first practice the other day, and the coach was like, hey, you ready to take it down to second? And I'm like, absolutely. So he lays down a short bunt, and I come out from behind the plate and grab a hold of that thing. That's 120 feet.
I know how far it is. I remember. And, how about you, Major League it, Tom Berenger?
No, I got it. I mean, the first one there came out strong.
Quite strong. It came out, I'd say, quite strong. And then
maybe the second or the third one started to, I got a bounce in there. And about the fifth one, man, I had to throw it so high in the air to get it out the
long
second.
Ball it.
And
like it came firing from a damn bow.
I had to tell him.
I'm definitely heckling somebody when we get over
like,
there.
Hey, man, I haven't thrown a baseball since 25 years. You guys are going to have to give me some warm-up time here. Like, everybody's
–
I'm probably one of the younger guys on the team. So the coach was like, that's hey, disturbing. Y'all don't do nothing to hurt yourself. We're not running the bases. We're not sliding. We're not doing anything like that.
Think about that, man. Y'all need to start recruiting young bloods for these baseball games. That's what this is all about, right?
You know, even the coach?
Oh, Roger Williams from Texas.
Okay, so a congressman is the coach.
Yeah, and he is die. He's awesome, man. He is a die. I mean, he's like, hey, you're gonna be here if practice starts at 6, and I don't mean warm up. I mean, we're throwing at 6:00.
Well, I hope you get your brother a jersey because he's gonna feel real left out if
I'm not
you don't
gonna be
get
left out. I'm gonna be right there in it. Don't worry about it. I don't know who I am.
And maybe hiding behind the plate is a catcher one.
We might switch halfway. Y'all know nothing.
You've got to have knee surgery on April 25th.
You could have left that part out.
Okay.
Yeah, well. For the scar. That's okay. So just so you know, that allows being on the team allows me to meet so many of the other members.
Right.
And also,
that's where you get to know.
It builds up relationships, right? Like with the other side too, because it's a sport, right?
Mm-hmm. That's the best.
I love that.
Y'all ought to have to eat together.
That is nice.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's great.
You know? Who was it, me and you talking? Like, if we ever get sent back to war, 30 y'all need to go over and rotate on deployment. That's a good idea too.
I don't know, but there's basketball team, there's the baseball team, there's the
where do they play
golf, hockey.
There's a hockey
tennis.
Team.
Ooh, that golf would be nice.
Yeah, there's a hockey team too.
Come on. I'm going to play on that one. There's
I think there's a flag football, but if it was full pad tackle,
are you kidding me?
There's not. It's flag. It's not full pad.
It ought to be mandatory that they have to play football. Because yeah, I got to pad
I was,
up.
That's when I was really
male
pulling,
and female.
Pulling for Herschel Walker. I was like, bro, oh, man. Dude.
If we could have got him in there, man.
Just... Are you going to do any of the other sports?
I don't have time.
Are all of them just one game a year? Like practicing up for one game?
No, I think they have more. Because ours is such a, it's on National Stadium. So ours is kind of a, mm-hmm. that's the big deal.
It's just one, that one big game for y'all, right?
That's it. It's one. Yeah.
I'd ESPN be on the golf team. I mean, that would be fun.
I don't know. Yeah, but they play on the weekends.
They probably play a lot more.
And I'm home with Leslie and the boys and y'all.
Yeah.
I just, that's my.
No, you got the right one with the baseball thing.
Well, no, baseball's
that'd
awesome.
Be, yeah, that'll be fun.
How about that too, man, in the history book? Because, you know, our people record this, bro.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? So you got us in there and on the baseball
team. The last name.
Hey, that's kind of a big deal, man. I'm your biggest fan
so
now.
So I played softball out of college. In the military and the unit. Hitting a baseball is a lot different. Boy, it took a while for my bat to wake up. And finally, I was like, oh, aha, here it is.
We're practicing every day.
Well, as strike a baseball out. Mom, I'm super excited. Hunter played baseball literally his whole life. So
let's get it.
Makes me very excited.
I'll be your coach whenever you come down to Texas.
Mm-hmm. I need somebody.
Somebody get Roger Clemens online.
You know what I need? I need somebody.
One of our
I need
ringers
somebody to pitch to me so I can work the plate.
I got
I'm
you.
You. Call Roger. Every person we've ever met over our life never called in one favor. This might be it.
Yeah. So Greg Stubbe
look like no fool.
Greg Stubbe's he's our ringer right now. Yeah, I'll do my best.
Stubbe is
Greg Stubbe's our ringer. Yeah, he's our pitcher. Him and August Pfluger, like they're our pitchers. But Greg got hurt real bad. He fell out of a ladder out of a tree and he's broke
his hip. Oh, I saw that on the
You should have got that leaf filter.
So I've been texting.
Okay, so
I've been texting him. I was like, hey, we need you.
We need a pitcher then. Somebody run for office.
And
who's a good pitcher?
I got on the mound and was throwing. I was like, man, I hope you guys don't ever need me. But
so who else is on the team?
Oh, so we had our first practice the other day. Let's see here. Jake Elzey.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's our right fielder. Kat Kamick from Florida.
Okay.
She's the one that freight trained that Democratic catcher last year. I don't know if y'all heard about that. I mean, like, plugged him.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. How funny.
Yeah. Roger Williams. Kevin Brady was a diehard. And so that's why Scalise is a second baseman. He's August Pfluger.
Dude, he's so diehard. He took a bullet for it. Love that man.
Joni Ernst comes out.
Oh, nice.
Cool. Senator Ernst. She says she's so great.
She seems
so
like
the senators, can they come in and play?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a House of Representatives, so it could be upper.
Oh, Roger that.
How fun. My gosh, I love
that. All the Texans, they're not playing?
Not all of them. What the hell? Judge Moran came out from Tyler. I was trying to get Wesley to come out. Crenshaw plays soccer.
He plays soccer?
Yeah, Crenshaw plays soccer.
Good job.
Well, because he grew up down in, what, Mexico or something? Spent a lot of time down there.
Let's see who else. I'm embarrassed. I can't remember everybody's names.
No, we're not gonna put you on the spot. That's enough.
Yeah, that's all right. That's awesome, though. Yeah, I love the camaraderie, like that. You have to do something together where you're having fun, and it's not just this at your throat thing. Well, good. Well, so for campaigning, what do you think is the best part of campaigning, and what's the worst part?
Oh, the best part is you get to meet so many people. I would never got to meet half the people that I got in front of if I wasn't out running the roads.
Yeah.
So a lot of people showed up while we were away.
Yeah.
And it's back to how it was when we were kids, right? We could point out who lived in each house.
Well, I'm not that good yet, but you know, because it's normally
who's your daddy and what does he do?
Normally large, because I'm one guy trying to get in front of 800,000 people. Mm-hmm. So the best I can, I try to do my best to chat with everybody. And that's a lot of fun because so many different stories, so many different personalities, so many different just kind of people out there in our district. Luckily, from here, I know a lot of people as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a degree of separation. So there's people come up like, hey, I'm buddies with Robert Walker. Oh, okay, yeah. You know, that kind of thing. I'd say the hardest part about campaigning is it's 24/7.
Yeah.
You have to be switched on when you're outside regardless. And it's a grind. I mean, whoever campaigns the hardest, knocking doors, making phone calls, going to all the events that you can, sun up to sundown, breakfast, lunch, brunch, and dinner. And then, you know, mid-rats. And you're trying to get everybody to believe in you.
Yeah.
And that can be challenging. Because it's such a diverse, politics is so diverse. Even in our district, because we have Harris County now, and I lost Harris County in the election.
Oh, you did?
I did.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so I won Polk, San Jacinto, Walker, and Montgomery. I won those, but I lost Harris County. Now, Harris County is not like Livingston. It's not like Point Blank. It's not like Conroe or Willis, Waverly, Huntsville. They're not like those folks out there. And so I have to be able to, you know, I got to lead it all. So I got to speak the languages.
Part of Harris, like if you were Cypress looking at a Katie. Map. So Cypress.
So if you go 99 down to 6, it takes 6 over, I'm sorry, 99 down to 10. Take 10 over to 6 and come back up.
Okay.
That's the flank on that side. And then we have just a fraction of Katy. Like not even the town.
So you're talking about the main election, you lost that.
The main general election, we lost Harris County. Okay. Did. Yeah. Unfortunately. I'm sure we're fighting. We're down there. Back.
But you won all the others.
I did.
So with Katy, do you have any of Fort...
Fort Bend, that's Mr. Nails.
Okay. And then you go all the way, your most northern part is...
Huntsville,
but you go east really
so
far.
So we actually, there's a little horseshoe around the university, the town. So if you make the horseshoe around the town, east and west, I go all the way up to 30 and out. And I go, and then all the way, all of San Jacinto and Polk County. Okay. So all the way out to Livingston is my furthest east town.
Yeah.
And then south is 1488. I lost the Woodlands to Mr. Crenshaw.
Oh, yeah.
So 1488 North.
Okay.
Is mine.
When we drive to Louisiana, we take that back road, like to Leesville, and we like all the way through Woodville and.
I love that drive.
It's Dr. Babin's area.
Yeah, and well, we see your signs.
We go all the way out to the, right there on the edge of Polk County.
Okay. Yeah. It's awesome when we're driving out there. I'm like, golly, Oregon's all the way out here.
Yeah, long way.
Yeah.
It's fun because the majority, like all of Montgomery County, so Montgomery, Magnolia, and then Conroe Willis, that's where we grew up. And then Huntsville's where we went to school, New Waverly.
Everything.
Fishing and hunting out in Polk County, out in Livingston. The Alabama Coushatta tribe. Yeah. Is in my district, and they're great.
We drive right past the entrance to that.
They're great. I was out there not too long ago. It's a great, I call it a hybrid district, you know, because we have the Harris County on with us now. So I have to realize that. And I have to explain because I represent.
Right.
So I have to explain. I'm a very Christian conservative guy. I mean, like I'm not the hardest right guy in Congress, but I'm right a middle. Harris County's not like that.
Yeah.
You know, and they have 400,000 voters. They have the largest voting base in the district.
In your district?
In the district.
400,000 of Harris County?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so when does that kick off?
Already started.
You already started doing
campaigning?
That.
Yeah. That's what this is.
I started campaigning the day after I got elected, but we're a year out, March 5th.
Okay. So do you have to do a primary again?
That is it, yeah.
Oh my
God. You get primary every year and a general.
Oh,
but my we're a primary district, so that's the election for us.
Yeah. Oh goodness, that sucks. That's the worst part about it.
Yeah, it's all right. Inundate myself with work, and you know, if I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. There's somebody better than me in there. If somebody they want more than me, then
yeah.
Hey, I'll support them. Hope it's not the case.
Somebody find something else harder to do.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on today. We just wanted to hear you.
I'm proud of you, big bro.
Yeah, we're proud of you.
Too. Appreciate it.
Thank you for trying to get you out on time.
How can we support or kind of keep up with what you do? Is there any channels or?
Yeah, so my official Facebook, Instagram is Rep Latrell.
Rep Latrell TX.
Okay, Rep Latrell TX.
Uh-huh.
And campaigning, it's Mojo at Morgan Latrell.
And then your website is just morganlatrell.com, and that's how people can donate. We had so many people ask us, we want to mail a check to Morgan, or we want to, I'm like, just go to his website. It has all of the information on there. Yep. If you want to mail a check, if you want to donate online or whatever, if you buy a shirt, it goes towards campaign money, right? If you buy it from the website, so...
The merchandise is good too.
Yes.
Yeah, check out those pictures.
We didn't chump it up.
Oh, yeah. Hunter's a model on your...
That's all right.
We're going to have some fun with this, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening in. We'll see you next week.